Good morning and welcome to this morning's Cabinet meeting. We have a full attendance, so there are no apologies. Order of business.
Yeah, just a couple of things on the order of business. Firstly, just to say that the convener has agreed that the agenda items 5.12 and 5.13, which are the Finance and Integrated Service Support Quarter 4 Performance Report and the Property and Facilities Quarter 4 Performance Report, be moved up the agenda and be the first two items of business actually taken under public report, so that's before the Bilston Primary School inspection. The second thing to mention is that there's been tabled this morning for members an additional report on the inspection at Dalkeith High, which the convener has agreed is a matter of urgency to take this as item number 5.1A on the agenda, which is immediately after the Bilston inspection report.
Okay, thank you. Are there any declarations of interest at this stage? Okay, thank you. The minutes of the meeting of the 10th of April for approval. Are members happy that they're correct record? Any issues arising? None. Okay, thank you. We'll now move on to the first of the public reports, as the clerk says. We'll take item 5.12 first, which is page 169 for these of you on the laptops.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for accommodating the revised running order. In terms of finance and integrated support, and the presentation will focus on a number of the key strategic successes and also refer to the challenges. The Council's financial strategy was approved at February Council, and the Comprehensive Change Programme was reported to Business Transformation Steering Group yesterday, and I was pleased to note the executive report format was formally adopted by the group. Our workforce strategy was approved by Council in December, and we also, during the first quarter of this financial year, rolled out the Connect E newsletter to improve communications with our staff. Members will be aware this is General Data Protection Regulation Week. It goes live on Friday, and there's been a significant amount of work done across the Council to ensure we comply with the legislation. We're very much at the foundation stage, but a significant amount of preparatory work has been undertaken. I'm also pleased to report the leisure management and online school payments systems are progressing extremely well, and that should enhance the customer experience. Moving on to the emerging challenges, a number of the challenges have already been reported to Cabinet and Council previously. However, there's a couple I'd like to draw to Cabinet's attention. The revised capital strategy will be coming in draft to the June Council, and the numbers behind the capital strategy are significant, which reflects the growth and the expansion of Midlothian. I'm also pleased to report that the Council's complied with compliance of the public services network across our digital estate, and currently this week a number of staff are deployed on opening the new Battle Digital Centre of Excellence, and I'm no doubt my colleagues Mary and Grace may speak about that in the subsequent presentation. And finally, we'll come forward with a procurement strategy at the June Council. Chair and Cabinet members, I'll pause there if members have any questions or clarifications.
Are there any questions or comments? Russell?
Chair, on the Director mentioned that coming to the June meeting is a prepared revised capital strategy. Could I just ask, I know we get our capital programme or capital borrowing allowance from Scottish Government. Are they taking into account the growth of Midlothian and what they allow us to borrow, in the sense that clearly there's a demand on us to continue to provide in particular statutory services? And I just wondered, in terms of capital, whether we get an extra allowance on the basis of our growth rate.
In terms of the capital strategy and the borrowing, it's determined by the Prudential Code, which has been aligned to the ability to repay the mortgage, so to speak. Our current ceiling is 124 million. The capital strategy coming forward with the draft proposals will be probably 10 times greater than that, given the expansion and the investment required across the whole of the council asset base, including schools, roads, infrastructure, care homes. So I'd be proposing when the draft strategy comes forward to council in June, it'd probably be logical we'll have a seminar, briefings to work out where it all aligns to council priorities and also the affordability, because a factor of 10 times the current ceiling is significant, and it is causing the executive team and colleague heads of service significant workload just pulling together. But that's reflecting in the positive expansion of the county.
Okay, thanks for that, John. Are there any other further questions for John on this issue? Okay, thank you. Move on to 513, Property and Facility Management Performance Report, John.
Thanks again, Chair. In terms of property and facilities management, a number of the projects are in addition to the day job, and although this is a year-end report, a significant number of the work straddles a number of financial years and periods. Within building services, we opened Paradise Campus on time and under budget. I've already mentioned New Battle High School is opening to leisure users, ideally the end of this week. We've also, within our facility services, been successful in operating contracts for Skanska, Melville Housing and partners at the NHS. Within sport and leisure, we have the continued success of the free swimming during school holidays, and there's been a significant amount of work undertaken by our aging well team. In terms of property assets, a capital board has been established, and that in turn informs the capital strategy I referred to earlier and has representation from all council directorates in order to make sound recommendations for the council to consider. Within facility services, we're looking at options to reduce plastic packaging, initially within catering services, and we'll be coming forward with proposals during the summer about moving to less plastics being utilised. And generally, the key issue within property and facility service is balancing the day job with the amount of projects, and as from you can see from today's papers, we have a significant amount of project work which will have to be resourced, and as I mentioned, that Business Transformation Steering Group yesterday will be coming forward so we can invest and progress the projects in addition to the routine stuff to reflect the expansion of our county. I'll pause there, Chair, if members have any questions.
Comments, questions? John, thanks for that. There are some really good news stories in here as well. When you look through some of the paperwork here, the ageing well team have done exceptionally well in picking up some good awards in that. There are some good areas in here that I think were there. One of the things, John, that you see that we've now got the new leisure system up and running, will that allow us now to look more in depth at, like, say, peak time usages and off-peak times to give us an idea of where there is a availability during the day and that as to where we could look to try and promote the use of these facilities to try and maximise our income?
Yep, that's one of the benefits of investing in the leisure management system, as we'll have data and information to make properly informed decisions to fit in with customer patterns and also maximising the use of our estate. And as it was raised yesterday at Transformation Steering Group, I think it's incumbent we come forward as part of the next financial strategy looking at the balance between peak and off-peak charging. And that's something we'd look to do during the current say the early autumn.
Okay. Jim?
Yeah, this issue kind of goes across several of the papers that are here before us today. John mentioned moves within the council to reduce the amount of plastic we're consuming. I'm sure Ricky's going to touch on that, given the difficulties that we've got in getting, you know, rid of recycling in terms of the Chinese not taking it anymore. But one question I've been asked recently, and this is what I'm talking about, going across several strands here, is the use of plastic within schools, you know, in terms of, you know, plastic cups and things like that, vending machines and things. And the question I've been asked is, has the council considered issuing pupils with reusable cups for things like that, you know, that kind of thing? What are we doing in that kind of area? I'm not sure who's going to answer that one.
Ricky's nodding, so it's clearly not Ricky. I'll probably give a partial answer, Councillor. In terms of our schools offering, a lot of plastic comes from catering, and we're working with Scotland XL to change some of the product packaging. And I think, given the current focus on reducing plastics, suggestions such as bring a cup to school or give a cup, I think we should be looking at in the whole round. And I do totally agree, it's not just a facilities issue, it's a council-wide issue, and I think we should build on the current work that's happening locally, nationally and internationally about reducing plastics, because David Attenborough has brought a real issue to our attention, and he's certainly grabbed the mind of councils, trade associations, suppliers and producers, so it's something we look to bring forward council-wide.
Thanks for that, John.
I was just going to add, children and young people are very, very passionate about this issue in particular, and have their own mini campaigns running and are trying to do all that they can. So I think if the council can support that aspiration that we're plastic free, it would be a good move.
I think that's partly the reason that I'm asking that, and I think that young people are the way forward, and get, you know, they are responsive to the kind of things that have been highlighted recently. And, you know, anything that we can do to be supporting and encouraging that at a school level and across the council wider than that, but particularly with young people, I think is the right way forward. And, you know, we should be encouraging as many of these initiatives, and especially when the ideas are coming for the pupils themselves.
Okay, thanks for that. Any other questions or comments, points for this paper? Okay, thank you, John. Can we now move back on to the normalised agenda? We'll now move on to 5.1, which is an inspection of Balsillan Primary School. Grace.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to update Cabinet on the outcome of the Bilston inspection, which took place in January and was reported in Education Scotland's letter dated the 24th of April. Section 2.2 in the report outlines the evaluations for Bilston, which were good for 1.1 and 1.3 in the nursery and satisfactory for 1.1 and 3.2 in the primary school. Section 2.3 outlines the key strengths of the school's work, which includes the headteacher's clear direction and leadership, particularly in developing effective partnership working, the strong relationships which staff have with children, parents and the wider community, and the nursery environment, which promotes children's curiosity, independence and problem-solving skills. Section 2.4 outlines the three areas for improvement, and Section 5 outlines the background factors which are important here, including noting that Bilston was only opened in August 2016 and therefore it had only been open for 16 months at the point of the inspection itself. Section 4 concludes with the five recommendations, and I'm pleased to say that Cheryl Wallace and Nicola McDowell, School Group Manager for Bilston, are also here if you wish to ask them any questions about the inspection itself.
Jim.
Thanks, Convener. Yeah, I certainly feel that when we've had recent inspection reports, it's been really helpful to have the head teacher and schools group managers present. It would be helpful to all these reports are helpful to us in terms of monitoring what's happening in the individual schools, but they quite often need to be put in context, and I think it's helpful for us and helpful for the staff at the school to be able to, you know, to explain the context of it and explain what's going to be done to any areas or concern, how they're going to be alleviated. So I would welcome if the head teacher wanted to just explain maybe some of the background to us, if that would be okay.
Now I know how children feel when I bring them up in front of an assembly for an award. I just really want to start off, actually, though, by saying that I'm extremely proud of how far we've come in such a short time. I think Bilston Primary is a fantastic wee school, and we work very well together. as a staff team, which is our nursery practitioners, our teaching staff and our support staff, and we work exceptionally well with our children and our families, our communities and our partner agencies. So I think that's a really, that's a key strength that we're taking forward and building on. In terms of our satisfactory gradings, I'm actually very proud of where we got today with those gradings. We got some very, very positive feedback from the inspectors themselves, who said that had we been open for a bit longer or been a bit older as a school, you know, already they can see our capacity for improvement and the potential for upping those gradings, and that's exactly what we're aiming for. We have very high expectations and standards that we not only want to meet, but we want to exceed. And we're working very closely with all the support that we get from the centre to do that. In terms of where we're taking, am I saying all the right things here, Mrs. McDowell?
Carry on.
I've not done this before. In terms of taking forward, though, the key aspects, which is we have to make sure that school is safe, we have to make sure it's fun, exciting and stimulating. We've also got to make sure, though, our children achieve and attain. So we are still, again, looking at our literacy and our numeracy and our health and wellbeing, our three key areas, because we are still developing comprehensive programmes that are ensuring appropriate pace and challenge, breadth and depth for our children. We had a sort of a year where we had draft programmes. We've tweaked them this year. We're just coming to the end of our second year, and already we have new training in place, new resources that we want to try, and new approaches to take that forward to improve our attainment yet further next year, but still focusing very much on our key elements, first of all. Put that off now.
I think it was just would also be significant to say that Education Scotland very much took the context of the school into account in terms of the length of time it's been open, and recognised the significant amount of community building that has to go on when you open a school. Because Bilston Primary had been an annex of Roslyn Primary before, it had to build its own unique identity, and that doesn't come in a short period of time. So Education Scotland were very appreciative of the amount of time that Cheryl and her staff and her parents and partners had spent just building a community around the school before they can start that really robust focus on the programmes of study, etc., that take years of building as well to become consistent across the school.
Thanks, Nicky. Jim?
Yeah, I appreciate the comments, and this isn't a case of simply taking, you know, one existing school and moving it to a new location. There were a lot of complications associated with this, the development of this new school. So I think we take that on board, and obviously the Education Inspectorate have taken that on board as well. And apologies for putting you on the spot, but you know, it's helpful to, I think, just for us to get some kind of context from the leaders at the in the establishments that the reports refer to. So again, apologies for putting you on the spot.
Any other questions, comments, Russell?
Thanks, Chair. Just by way of comment, I mean, I have happened to visit the school maybe about 6 months ago now, and I have to say the feeling I got, you think the school had been there forever, because there was that community feel about it. There was that enthusiasm. Even the children, talking to the children, I mean, they were so pleased that they had actually now got their own school, so to speak, because they never felt it was their school, because it was an annex, and then you went up to Roslyn in the upper years. So from that perspective, you could see the build-up. Certainly from the community aspect as well, the community felt they were involved from day one, and thanks to our staff in here in commercial that actually drove the agenda for the school, because the community had an input. And I think, you know, when you see the outcome of that, you can see how it works well, that if you start early enough and involve stakeholders, then you can actually, the finished article is a lot better. And, you know, I think it's tantamount to the amount of work that Cheryl and the rest of the staff have actually put into the school, that you can actually see already how well established it is in the community, and it will grow, won't it, because all these thousands of houses are coming your way.
Thanks for that. Is there any other questions or comments? Okay, can we note the recommendations and agree to pass this to the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee for their attention? Okay, thank you. Item 5151A is the inspection of Dalkeith High School. Grace.
Thanks. The purpose of this report is to update Cabinet on the outcome of the Dalkeith High School inspection, which was reported in the Education Scotland letter dated today, which is why we're tabling it today, because it was under embargo until today itself. Section 2.2 outlines the evaluations for Dalkeith, which were good for 1.1, good for 2.3, good for 3.2 and satisfactory for 3.1. Section 2.3 outlines the key strengths of the school's work, which are the head teacher is highly committed and has a clear vision for the improvement at Dalkeith High School, that staff work well together and are engaging in a range of professional learning, and that the school is developing a creative and enriched curriculum to provide learning pathways for young people. Section 2.4 outlines the important areas for improvement, which include continuing to enable staff to engage in professional learning, to evaluate on an ongoing basis the success of the curricular developments, to align the school's work in refreshing the promoting positive behaviour policy, and to improve the consistency of systems and procedures are used, and it also references their monitoring and tracking. Section 4 concludes with the recommendations, and I'm pleased to say that both Alison Dobson, the head teacher from Dalkeith, and Maria Lloyd, senior education manager, are also here if you have any questions to ask.
Okay. Thanks for that, Grace. Come on, ladies. Jim.
Yeah, just repeat what I said to the last report. It's helpful to have the leaders from the schools in question along, and I would hope they would be able just to again put some kind of context to the results of this report.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for inviting me along this morning. Obviously, the report is hot off the press, just published today, available on the school website and winging its way to parents as we speak. We're very pleased with the report in Dalkeith High School. I was appointed head teacher 3 years ago. I seem to remember Jim being on the panel at the time. I'm very pleased with the direction of travel for the school and the achievements that we have been able to demonstrate in that period of time. Leadership of a large secondary school, especially a secondary school on a campus, is quite a complex thing. It's not an exact science, and in many ways it's like turning a large ship. And that large ship has absolutely turned. And I do believe that the report that has been published today is testament to the hard work of the staff within the school. We are evaluated in schools using a document called How Good Is Our School For? And it was updated some time ago now. 18 months ago, 2 years ago now. I'm looking at others, approximately that amount of time. And the expectations within How Good Is Our School For are far higher than they were in the past. And the level of scrutiny now within schools is quite intense in terms of an inspection. So no stone is left unturned in terms of an inspection. So we are very pleased with the report as it's turned out. In terms of comparison with other schools, especially secondary schools, obviously Dalkeith High School is the first secondary school in Midlothian to have been inspected using How Good Is Our School For? Some Edinburgh schools have been inspected more recently using How Good Is Our School For? And indeed in East Lothian. And there isn't a school in Edinburgh or indeed in East Lothian who have achieved a report as positive as this overall. I'll be very honest, across Scotland, I would say that there are three, possibly four schools that have received outstanding reports using the new inspection regime, and they absolutely deserve those reports, and that's absolutely where we will be the next time we are inspected. But we're very pleased with the direction of travel, and we will continue to work in that way. I think what really pleases me about the report too it's the second bullet point in terms of the strength, because it refers to what I consider to be the key strength of Dalkeith High School, and that is the collegiality of staff within the school. I'm extremely fortunate to lead a school where staff will absolutely go above and beyond what is expected of them as staff. They are a truly unique set of people to work with, and I'm pleased that that has been recognised. The third bullet point is actually two bullet points and one in my view as well. It refers to the curriculum changes that we have made, and I would invite any of the elected members to come out and actually see the really rich curriculum that is on offer in Dalkeith High School. But the second sentence in that third bullet point is more than what you would consider to be a curriculum, as in young people actually sitting in classes and getting on with things. The range of wider achievement opportunities within the school is vast as well. So clear leadership, good staff, good curriculum, and lots of wider achievement opportunities as well. In terms of the next steps, inspection reports are very political. There's always a political hue to them. And at the moment, the political hue is either developing the young workforce, which actually is a school we are very strong on, or indeed moderation of curriculum for excellence levels. And that's what that first bullet point is about. So I'm not surprised to see that at all in terms of continuing to moderate the work of curriculum for excellence. The second bullet point, which is evaluate the success of curricular developments, well, why would you not do that? That's absolutely an ongoing within the school. The third bullet point is about refreshing the positive behaviour policy and bringing it alongside our introduction of restorative approaches. Restorative approaches are really about if something goes wrong, then we're taking a step back, we're looking at the reasons for things going wrong, and then we're moving forward and repairing those relationships. So some behaviour policies, positive behaviour policies, don't always reflect that. So it's about bringing those two things in line. And then the last bullet point is about our systems and aligning our systems. We've spent some time, considerable amount of time, building up systems for tracking and monitoring for the progress of young people throughout the school, and in particular in the broad general education, S1, S2 and S3. And it's about using those systems that have been built in that period of time and making sure that we can actually track the progress of the young people, but actually, more importantly for me, actually finding the gaps for those young people and applying appropriate interventions so that they can actually achieve to the very best.
Thank you. Jim?
Yeah, thanks very much for that. And I agree with the points you're making about, you know, the strong team being the thing that makes the difference, people working together, prepared to undertake further learning themselves to progress their own development as well is really important. And, I take comfort from the conclusions that are in the paper from the inspectors indicating that they're confident that the school's got effective arrangements for ensuring continuous improvement and the quality education for all learners, and as a result they'll not be making any further visits to the school in connection with this report. I think that gives us comfort, as does the contribution that you've just made in terms of the commitment of the staff and moving the whole thing forward and working together as a team to make sure that happens is welcomed, certainly by myself and I would believe the rest of the Cabinet.
Thanks for that, Jim. Any other questions or comments? I think one of the things I sort of jump shoot to myself is that talks about in the report acknowledging the head teacher is highly committed and has a clear vision. I don't think you can get much clearer than there are two or three schools that are rated as outstanding, and that's where we're going to be after the next report. I certainly don't think you can get any more committed than that, and we look forward to welcoming you back when you have that outstanding report. Okay.
I'd like to say that's likely to be a few years from now. Given the inspection cycle, it tends to be every 5 or 6 years.
Okay, guys, with that, can we agree to note the recommendations and agree to forward this report to the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee? Okay, thank you, and thanks for your attendance. Okay, item 5.2 is the inspection of Midlothian Council's High Bank Intermediate Care Service. Alistair.
headphones not on, but my voice clearly is loud enough, rather worryingly. And I notice there's no disagreement in the room either. So it came, we're graded a 4 for care and support and a 3 for environment. Kind of section 3 just kind of identifies where some of the strengths were, but also the accompanying action plan notes that there's further work that still needs done. I suppose that the point that I'd wish to raise is the environment, and I suppose that points to my earlier discussion, which is Highbank has changed its function. It was built over 30 years ago. Whilst the quality of care is graded as good, it's a tired building. It's a building that doesn't have the ensuite facilities we'd expect to see in a modern, fit-for-purpose 21st century intermediate care facility. Whilst the teams work tirelessly and great support from our colleagues in property, it's difficult to keep the building as fresh as it needs to be. The feedback we got from Care Inspectorate is that whilst we retain in that building, we will never move beyond the 3 in terms of environment, because it is just not possible for us to fully meet the needs in relation to, say, single bathrooms, space for hoists, and so on. So that will be a key area of work that we'd look to progress in terms of reprovisioning that facility. As I say, the action plan is there, setting out what the team needs to do, and they remain committed to improve the grades where they can. The recommendation is to note the content report and the progress made, and also just to note that we'd also want the report to go to PRS, and that's an oversight from us. Apologies for that.
Okay, Alistair, I think everybody's quite clear the building's well past its use by date, and the quicker we can get a replacement in place, the better. And as you pointed out, the care inspector, I think quite rightly, with the age of the building and the new standards that we're looking at, that it's not ideally where we want to be, so the quicker we move. Any questions for Alistair? Are member happy to, with the recommendations and the additional recommendation to move to performance review and scrutiny committee? Okay, thank you, Alison. Okay, move on to item 5.3, and that's a report on demographic growth and increase in percentage of pupils with additional support and learning. Grace.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to highlight to Cabinet the significant increase in additional support and complex needs within Mid Lothian, and request an increase in funding to reflect the 7.93% increase. Section 2.1 outlines that Mid Lothian is now the fastest growing local authority, as published by the NRS. The significant increase in population affects the 0 to 15 and the over 75 age group. Section 2.2 outlines that this is not just a Mid Lothian issue in terms of ASL and complex needs, but is reflected in the rise nationally. In 2007, it was nationally 5.28% of pupils with additional support needs and complex needs, and that's risen in 2017 to 24.98%. In Mid Lothian, the ASL budget has not increased since 2014, despite the growth in ASL from 18.6% in 2014-15 to 26.53% in 2017-18. Therefore, if we do not increase the allocation, then we will provide less than 2 hours support a week to each child with an ASL need. In addition, following the placement allocation group meeting, which actually takes place towards the end of February, 37 referrals were received for pupils moving into primary one with complex needs. And that's a significant rise, because on average, when we were looking back at the trend, on average, that's around about 15 referrals that normally come in. This has resulted in Saltersgate and all primary and now secondary complex needs provisions now being at capacity with no available spaces for us. So in order to remedy this, this report has 4 recommendations. So firstly, to note the content of the report. Secondly, to note the rate, but also the type of demographic growth in terms of the age groups. Thirdly, that planning will now commence for one primary and one secondary complex needs provision. And we would, of course, bring a further report back to Council outlining that. And finally, to forward this report to Council in order to recommend the 3 items outlined in sections 4A to C.
Thanks for that, Grace. Jim?
Yeah, this is an unfortunate situation. There's a real problem here in terms of the timing, and that, you know, we're setting a budget before we know exactly what the requirements are here. And while that's the case to an extent with most of your services, to be frank, this is one that we've got to react to, which is why it's important that this paper comes before Cabinet in the way that it has today, because we need to make that kind of provision where it's absolutely as required. I mean, it makes quite stark reading the background to this report in terms of what we've known for a while to be the case, that Midlothian's going to be the fastest growing local authority. And in the figure one in the report, you know, showing that we are four times the population growth or the average Scottish council. Now, you know, while we are trying to take that into account, I think it's fair to say that it doesn't appear to me that the Scottish Government are taking the required steps in terms of provision of resources to fund this, which is acknowledged as in section 2.2 on the paper by the Scottish Government to be an issue that affects the whole of Scotland. When we're talking about the kind of increases that Grace has mentioned and the requirements, percentage of pupils with ASL requirements in Scottish schools being just over 5% in 2007 and almost 25% in the most recent study that was done, that is a huge increase and a huge burden. And officers can correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't appear to me that Scottish Government, even though they're recognising that to be the case, is putting adequate resources into local authorities to deal with it, and in particular into local authorities like Midlothian, with such, you know, it's exacerbated by the huge growth in our population as well. Now, I know that the leader of the council, prior to the budget being set this year, had meetings with Derek Mackay, the finance minister, and asked for a special case to be made for Midlothian in terms of the population increases and the pressures that brings. Now, that was wasn't acknowledged to the extent we would want it to be. I think what we're now seeing is some of the direct manifestations of that. We're starting to see practical examples of that kicking in now. Now, I understand that we've asked the Deputy First Minister to open a number of new schools, and he'll be in the area, and it wouldn't be fair to catch him on that kind of occasion. But I think we should be writing to the Deputy First Minister to highlight the issues that we are facing, and particularly in regards to this particular provision, and ask that again, that from an education perspective, Midlothian is treated as a special case in terms of the pressures that we've got in our demographics.
Thanks, Jim. I think certainly we should be looking to at least write to the Deputy First Minister, and indeed perhaps even looking to try and secure a meeting with him to discuss these areas. I'm not sure if there's any much more that we can add, John.
Thanks, Derek. I was just going to ask that a fivefold increase in the number of children requiring additional support, is that a change of assessment, or is it that our children in Scotland are growing up with more additional and complex needs? And what's the Scottish policy context around that we're delivering on in Midlothian?
So partly the reason is due to the presumption of mainstream. So previously, historically, there would be a number of special schools and far more provisions. It's very positive that we have mainstream education. But in addition to that, what we also have is more education around recognising additional needs. So we're far more skilled in terms of assessing children and recognising some issues a lot earlier. In terms of the early years provision, we're also working much more closely with our vulnerable 2s and 3-year-olds. So we're able to identify some of these issues earlier. Issues like dyslexia, for example, sometimes that only manifests itself in terms of teachers noticing
in that when children are reaching secondary two, secondary three stages, because they're beginning to do far more complex problem-solving tasks. We're now able to recognise that a lot earlier. The complex needs rise, we're seeing principally because of the presumption of mainstream, and we're seeing that really, really hitting the P1 intake this year in particular. It's good that we have that closeness, though, through the early years, because it also means that we can identify other factors that might become problematic later on. So if we leave it for too long, you can never close that gap. But if we're identifying it earlier and putting the right support in place, then these children can flourish and achieve the same qualifications and the same life chances as other children. And that's really what equity for us is all about. So it's a really important area for us to get that particularly right, particularly in the P1 stage, because we know if we can close the gap by the end of P1, it's plain sailing, therefore.
Russell.
Could I maybe ask on recommendation C, and I'll preface it by saying that I understand the reason why the paper's here, because you're out of kilter with the budget process. But on C, it actually asks for that percentage to be increased on the need identified in that specific year. My question is how can we have a balanced budget that goes through in February or maybe beginning of March in advance of these figures coming up? What kind of strap line would you put in there? I'm not quite understanding it. It's just that I understand why the paper's here, and it's unfortunate, but we can't actually change our budget date till after this work's been carried out. But how are we going to do it in future years, given that if we agree that, we're actually agreeing to something that we don't know, and you'll still not have to come back for a supplementary estimate? That's perhaps my question.
Yeah, and we can't change the dates of the place and request allocation, because you know that's strictly governed, so it is late and it is after the budget setting. We could also look at trend data, for example. I think we're out of kilter because it's not moved since 2014, so it may be that we don't need to do it every year, and it may be that some years it goes down slightly and then up, so just so that we could get a wee bit closer to the mark in terms of what we need. And I think it's hitting us this year in particular because actually all of our spaces are full, so that's a bit about the demographic growth. So I think we've reached this unique point, and I would imagine once we've got that provision moving forward, we would just be tweaking it. I wouldn't expect to see that huge increase that we have seen across Scotland from 2007 to 2017 reflect itself for the next 10 years ahead. I'd be very surprised if that was the case.
Okay, John.
Thanks, Derek. Looking at potential growth, I'm recognising it's probably hopefully not going to be at the same sort of scale, but what does that mean for our accommodation at Salters Gate and at other schools? Is there a requirement to look at expanding in the future or rejigging existing floor space or looking at other schools?
For Salters Gate, we already adapted a section of St David's High School. The issue with Salters Gate is we need to make sure that we're assessing the needs of those children who go there. Historically, some children may have had a shared placement at Salters Gate that actually the needs could have been met in a provision within a mainstream school. So that's why we're saying if we have a primary provision, a secondary provision, that would also take the stress off Salters Gate, because actually the shared placements that we've got in place just now that are really well assessed, and we've got a really good support package around that, actually really, really works and it delivers what we need. Salters Gate have highly specialised staff, so it's really important that we utilise that expertise for the children with highly complex needs that require it there, and other children who can access provisions on a shared placement opportunity, their life chances improve, because actually they're achieving qualifications at the level, so some children can access NAT5 qualifications, for example, with a bit of work within a provision and a shared placement. So it's just making sure that we've got the mix right. So we think we're okay with Salters Gate and the expansion into St David's, but we just need one additional secondary provision and one additional primary provision. In terms of the primary provision, maybe that we build that into the new schools that we're already planning. So we just have to build it into that. It's not something that's going to be extremely expensive in order to actually deliver.
Thanks, Chris. Any other comments or questions? Okay, can we agree the recommendations, and can we also agree that we write to the Deputy First Minister raising our concerns and asking for additional support. Okay, thank you.
And a meeting, Derek, I think would be worthwhile asking for a meeting.
Okay. Okay, item 5.4 is creating a world-class education system and update on partnership. Grace.
Thank you. Committed to the creation of a world-class education system through excellence and equity, the purpose of this report is to update Cabinet on the very positive ongoing partnership working with the University of Edinburgh. The report itself specifically refers to the signing of the heads of terms and also the opening of the new Centre for Research and Innovation in Learning. Section 2 outlines the background, including the ongoing work to open the new Centre for Excellence in Digital that John mentioned earlier. Pupils are going to be moving into there on the 5th of June. Section 3 outlines the key objectives, which include the aims of the partnership. And Section 4 refers to the ongoing work in terms of research and development, including the opening of the new Centre for Research and Innovation in Learning on the 22nd of June in partnership with the University of Edinburgh and the General Teaching Council for Scotland. We're also delighted that Avis Glaze, who is one of the international advisors to the Scottish Government and former Ontario Education Commissioner, has agreed to be the patron of this new centre, and the aims of the new centre are also listed in section 4.2. Section 5 references the heads of terms, and the report asks Cabinet to authorise officers to sign the heads of terms in partnership with the University of Edinburgh and to note the opening of the new Centre for Research and Innovation in Learning on the 22nd of June.
Thanks, Grace. Comments, questions, Jim?
Yeah, just to say I'm welcome this report. We have made really good progress in our work with, particularly with the university here. And the interesting thing when you look through the paper, it's no one way. You know the university are getting the benefit of working with us just as much as we are getting the benefit of working with the universities. I think we're heading to exciting times, and it's good to be at the forefront of something new. I think that's good for Midlothian in general. So I absolutely welcome this. And I note that while the heads of terms don't tie us into anything in legal terms, it's good to get that agreement in terms of the moving forward and working in partnership with the university.
John.
Thanks, Derek. Just a comment. I think in my experience in talking to teachers who aspire to see a lot of our children move on into university and other areas, I often get a sense for some families, with the university being in Edinburgh, it's out of sight, out of mind, and people kind of aspire to something more around their local surroundings. And what's great about having the university come to us in that respect is, you know, people get a sense of working with the university, knowing what it's about, and understanding really early on about what higher education means and what it can deliver for them. So I'm really excited about this, and it's pleased to see this relationship bedding in further.
Thanks for that. Okay, can we agree the recommendations in the report? Okay, thank you. Can we now move on to item 5.5, diversion of public bus at Murrayswood. Pennycook. Mickey.
Thanks, Sam Chair. Yeah, the purpose of this report is to seek approval from Cabinet to progress with a public path diversion order, and that's for existing paths across the site of a new housing development at Morriswood in Pennycook. And there are two paths involved. The developer consortium seeking to divert the paths to accommodate the development footprint while still providing access between the two points covered. What I would say is that both in terms of the temporary path and also the permanent path, there would be a significant improvement in what's there presently. And in terms of the time frame, the existing paths will be removed later this year and replaced by a temporary path until completion of the whole path network, which is tied in with the development in 2023. So turning to the recommendations, Chair, Cabinet's recommended to instruct the Director of Resources to progress the diversion order in line with the process which is described under Section 2 of the report. Pause at that point.
Thanks, Ricky. Any questions or comments? We agree to the recommendations in the report? Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, we now move on to the quarterly reporting. 5.6, Adult and Social Care, pages 73 to 88. Alistair.
Just picking up some key points from the report, I suppose just the highlights, certainly in terms of progress, has been particularly the highlight around the work with the voluntary sector. We've seen some real progress in terms for mental wellbeing access point, which is attracting a lot of people attending that, as well as wellbeing workers, which are within the general practice. Again, both them as part of our partnership with the voluntary sector. And again, just emphasising our focus on prevention, self-management and recovery within health and social care. Tiviot Court obviously opening as well in terms of supporting people with complex needs. And again, a real flagship piece of work there in Pennycook. Further work in relation to review of unpaid work, and certainly the refocusing on that team to look at far greater training pathways, and really as a way of moving people out of the criminal justice system and into employment and so on. And I think that we're beginning to see some real positive movements within the unpaid work team that will see those new pathways going in. Again, continuing to respond to the needs of carers, absolute backbone of how we deliver our work within Midlothian, and some funding that's come through from government, as well as just a renewed focus on carers, again, remains at the forefront of what we're doing. Overall, the financial position has improved, though we still acknowledge there are underlying pressures across the resource panel, particularly within learning disabilities. I would also want to note the challenges within care at home. We are trying out a new model around working closely with GP practice and district nursing and the voluntary sector in Pennycook, which is certainly demonstrating some real improvements around the way that people are working together, and really particularly those who are housebound and frail and elderly. Overall, we're seeing improvements against the benchmarking that we're measured against. So good progress overall, but still further work to be done. And happy to take any specific questions.
OK, Alistair, I think we're all afraid with the pressures on the adult social care side that we've got and the rising demand. Questions, comments? I'm a member happy to note this quarterly report. Okay, thank you. Moving on to item 5.7, Customer and Housing Services, pages 8 to 9 to 100. Alistair, is that you again?
I'll pick up in Kevin's absence. So my colleague Simon Bain is here to deal with any trickier questions you may have. So picking up some of the highlights, obviously we've had the three-year rent strategy has been agreed from 2019 to 2022, which again will that creating a balance of a fair rent as well as our commitment to further council house building. We are continuing to see with the opening of Pentlands and Poulton, we've seen a reduction in B&B use, and again that I think gives us a firm foundation for future developments such as Jarnock Court, or actually a real move into meaningful accommodation and hopefully eradicating all use of B&B. In terms of broader work with care leavers and working closely with colleagues in Mary's Services, creating that single point of contact for particularly for care leavers and our looked after children to make sure that they get the right support at the right time, and further work in relation to our health and homelessness action plan and also support for prison leavers. More generally moving into other areas, we saw the successful relocation of the contact centre into Midlothian House. We saw the reinstatement of the CAT team within community safety. And again, overall, we're seeing improvements across some of those areas that we're benchmarked within.
Thanks for that, Alistair.
Thanks, Chair. Just to acknowledge a couple of brief comments, Chair. The good work undertaken by the Youth Homelessness Team, both in terms of the carers and the SQA Pre-Tenancy Award for Life Skills. And also welcome that we adopt the SURE standard for people on remand or serving a short-term sentence. Although I do understand we did have a previous protocol, we didn't do that. A little bit disappointed that we've been unable to progress a joint procurement for the CRN system with East Lothian. I think I did acknowledge the good work that had been done at the last Cabinet quality report. That's it.
Okay.
Any other question, John?
Thanks, Derek. With the move away from B&B to a hostel environment, one of the things that certainly attracted me, and I'm sure other members, is the fact that there's staff on site and, you know, the ability to engage with people. Is there a system in place to monitor outcomes for people that are coming through the hostel system in terms of their, you know, where they end up in permanent and secure housing?
Yep, there is. So we contract with two organisations currently. Places for People have rebranded, as you may be aware, they're now called With You. So they manage 3/4 of our shared supported housing projects across Midlothian. The other organisation is Salvation Army, who manage the Poulton Centre and Pentland House. So we receive monthly performance information. And included in that report are outcomes for service users in terms of moving on and where they move on to in terms of accommodation. As Alistair mentioned earlier on, other outcomes in terms of employment and education as well, because that's a kind of key feature of the support work that's undertaken in our services. So I suppose long answer, but in short, yes, we do monitor outcomes.
Thanks, Simon. Jim?
Yeah, can I go to a specific issue on page 96 of the paper? And it's actually, it might involve more than just Simon answering it. It's about the homeless reduction initiatives in terms of working with young people to prevent them that are, you know, getting to the point where they're maybe leaving school or are about to leave school and have got a danger of becoming homeless. It was to get interviews and with them to try to avoid that. Now, it was my understanding that was quite successful. It was certainly, I remember when it was introduced here, and it was quite successful in other local authorities. What it's saying here in the details is that this the provision is off target. We've got a target of 80 interviews for young people, and I think we've achieved 30. Can I just get a wee bit of background on that? Because what it's saying is it's off target because it's impacted by individual school timetable and school priorities. I'm just wondering if there's an issue here that we maybe need to work closer together on this, because, as I say, it certainly was my impression that this was something that was actually very worthwhile and very effective in terms of diverting young people away from and preventing them becoming homeless in the first place.
Yep, I mean, it continues to be a service priority for the homelessness service. There's on it's page 6 on the report. You'll see third from the bottom. One of the windows that staff use is just before pupils in S4 and S6 commence their cramming for their National Fives and their hires. Due to the adverse weather conditions in February, the classes that were planned had to be postponed. Staff just couldn't get into work and schools were closed. So unfortunately that's always a kind of a key window we've missed. In terms of kind of mitigating that, and then that's the we staff spoke with guidance teachers who have got materials that they can disseminate to pupils, which they did, but the actual classes and presentations, we didn't follow up on that because there just wasn't the opportunity to do so as due to other pressures within schools. The staff team have a very good relationship with the guidance teachers within each of the high schools, and again that reflects on previous performance over the last few years, where all S2, S4 and S6 classes have undergone the presentations that are provided.
Just to say, I wasn't aware of that, so I'm more than happy to work with other officers if you find that due to adverse weather or whatever, we need to do something else within schools. And also just to say that our LLE team also, within their positive destinations work, would also be picking up these things. So we'll just make every effort to ensure that nobody misses out for this.
But just to give that reassurance that, you know, that it's a priority for the service, and we'll ensure that We we can't anticipate the adverse weather conditions, but just in terms of enforcing that teachers have those materials, and you know where members of staff are unable to get into schools, that there's another channel to get that information to young people.
That's fine. I'm happy on the basis of the answers given. I just wanted to make sure this wasn't sort of falling off the agenda for a number of reasons, but it looks in particular that there's a big part of it is a one-off thing in terms of the weather, so I'm quite content with that we're talking to each other. Good.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments on this? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Simon. Now move on to item 5.8, Children's Services. Mary?
Thanks, Convener. As set out in the Children's Services report, Joan has indicated successful areas of the Children's Services plan for 2017-18. These include the PACE programme, and this is about moving children to permanent placements more quickly and ensures better outcomes for children. It's part of a national project going forward. Looked after children's successes include the refurbishment of Woodburn and Dalkeith homes, setting up for provision for children with severe and complex needs, and the Champions Board, ensuring our children and young people have a voice. The work of the Champions Board and the PACE programmes are being evaluated externally and nationally, and the interim reports show that Midlothian is making really good progress and being sector leader in some areas. This report also covers other areas of success as set out in the paper. The emerging challenges and risks are set out in the report, but these should not be underestimated. For example, we currently have 4 young people in secure care at a cost of £250,000 per year for each young person. These placements are designated by a children's hearing or a sheriff, so we have little control over these placements and little control when youngsters come out. In addition, members are aware we've been working with partner agencies regarding summer provision for our most vulnerable children, and Joan will have a menu of options ready to send out to parents on her return. But you know that we've been trying to get someone to commission a service to undertake the programme that we had at Saltersgate, but we've been unable to do that. So we will have a menu of supports that parents can opt into when Joan returns. Happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Questions or comments, Jim?
I just, you know, want to make the comment again here that once again we're seeing the manifestation of the problems that we've got with the demographics in our area, initiatives that are coming through the Scottish Government, the impacts of legislation that are affecting us that are no adequately funded. These are kind of classic examples of it that are before us here today.
Okay. Any other questions or comments at this stage? Mary?
Just to reassure Jim, I've actually asked Joan to prepare a report for June Council, just where the pressures are, and actually get evidence rather than me saying off the top of my head, oh, I think it's this or I think it's that. But in order that, you know, our elected members are fully aware where the pressures are coming from and the pressures on the budget.
Would it be appropriate in that we'll use that as an opportunity as well to maybe highlight some of the legislative changes that have happened over the last few years and its subsequent impact, just to highlight some of that and where some of the budget shortfall might come from?
Okay. Okay, members. Happy? Or any other questions on this? Okay, thanks, Mary. Okay, now moving on to item 5.9, communities. Ian?
Thanks, Chair. Progress on meeting strategic outcomes for the communities and economy services shown on the first page and a half of the report. I'm not going to dwell on those. What I'm going to do is to pick up on key issues for this coming year and the following few years. And I'm going to do it in terms of 4 overall themes. And they'll be picking on the challenges which are set out on page 2 of the second page of the report. It's not surprising that, in fact, the number one issue really is addressing the infrastructure consequences of the rapid rate of growth, not just the amount, but the rapidity of it, which will be occurring over the next 10 to 12 years, and which has already got momentum, as you can see. There are various ways in which we can look to try and address those, and you've obviously talked about some of those today already. From the planning side of things, the newly adopted local development plan and the CESS plan number 2 provides a good planning base in a number of ways. First of all, it's an up-to-date planning position. The CESS plan position means that we can understand what the amount of housing required is to 2029, and the local development plan has identified the sites for that. So it gives you, as the planning authority, control in trying to restrict further housing development. Yes, there can still be challenge, but if you want to get into the best position for trying to resist that, I think you are in the best position. In terms of funding, obviously there are various sources, but in terms of where we're looking at from developers, then the supplementary guidance on developer contributions and affordable housing is getting to the stage where, Chair, we would hope to bring that to members, presumably by way of initial seminar or discussion, because it's going to be critically important in trying to ensure we maximise that. We are one of the authorities that probably collects as much developer contributions per unit as just about anywhere else in Scotland. That's a reflection of how hot the housing market is in this part of the world, and not surprising to some extent. But one of the things that's most important in relation to setting developer contributions is if we've got some certainty of strategy. So things like the learning estate strategy, things like the IJB setting its stall out, become critically important in giving us the agenda to be able to really demand what we need from the developers in terms of money as much as anything else. Second theme would be driving forward the agenda for working with communities. So it's not just the spirit of the Christie Commission and those principles there, but also the provisions of the Community Empowerment Act and the letter of what's being required. So that covers areas like further development of community asset transfers to local groups and organisations, further schemes of participatory budgeting, working with communities in Newton Grange in relation to the implementation of hopefully soon to be approved master plans at Newton Grange Town Centre and Stob Hill, working with the In It Together group at Mayfield and the local community to look at Mayfield Centre regeneration, renewing and making and refocusing the rights and advice services in Midlothian to address the increased demands across the board, but particularly those resulting from the introduction of universal credit, working with representative groups in the local community in Penicuik on the imminent town centre regeneration scheme, and working with Wandale Keith on its development of a business improvement district for the town centre. All elements that need to be driven forward. Third theme is that we're looking to realign the Economic Development Service following a period of significant staffing changes and taking the opportunity of doing so through a new economic development strategy. The current one dates from 2014 and is now out of date, although a lot of its principles are still there and can still be taken forward. But the focus needs to be on what's now known as inclusive growth. So we're looking to create opportunities to provide on-the-ground small-scale business premises to meet what is now high demand. And that high demand is coming through our business gateway at work, and we ought to maintain strong performance in dealing with our small and medium-sized enterprises, which is the lifeblood of the Midlothian economy. We need to ensure Midlothian confirms its position as a substantial gainer from the finally approved city deal, which one hopes will be signed within the next couple of months. That's not only projects specifically within Midlothian, such as Sheriff Hall Roundabout, but also projects at nearby locations, nearby parts of the region, as well as getting a full value out of the skills programme. Part of that city deal also relates to infrastructure to provide for the further expansion of one of our key sector employment areas at Easterbush, and that remains a high priority. And just the fourth theme I'd like to pick up on is it's important to remember that communities and economy includes four frontline regulatory and development services. That's planning, building standards, environmental health, and trading standards. And the quality and speed of which they can work are essential in terms of keeping things moving. So maintaining performance levels in the handling of increased numbers of both major and minor planning applications and building warrant applications. Further establishing the trading standards partnership with East Lothian Council to provide what would be a critical mass of staff resource to operate a competent service across both councils. maintaining a fully responsive environmental health service whilst dealing with some pretty big issues over the past year, one being the food contamination problem, one of our major food manufacturers, and also the gas ingress incidents at Gore Bridge. So, just in summary, Chair, there are a huge number of issues to consider, so it's important to direct limited resources into what I think are the primary activities of driving inclusive growth, working with communities to deliver demonstrable improvements, and providing frontline regulatory and development services that deliver quality services on time, which get the basics right. Happy to take questions.
Thanks, Ian. Any questions or comments? Russell?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Midlothian's rapidly running out. Midlothian Council's rapidly running out of its own land. And you mentioned there just now on economic development terms, the demand is now increasing, particularly through Business Gateway, for small and medium enterprises wanting to set up or indeed expand in Midlothian. Is there an opportunity for us to CPO land, if indeed that's zoned for economic development, if indeed the people that have got that land are actually looking to develop it for alternatives to economic development? It's just a thought, because more and more we seem to be getting inquiries to develop economic demand for non-economic development purposes. And I just wondered if there's maybe an opportunity to, just with you saying what you were saying regarding the demand, if there's an opportunity for us to look at a CPO way of addressing that.
I mean, CPO powers can be used for that under the Planning Act, in fact. And, in fact, government has in the last few months or last year indicated its willingness to try and assist local authorities who have been traditionally, understandably, quite resistant about using CPO powers, because it's a very long road in trying to be successful and often, at the end of the day, isn't successful. I think that one of the issues that comes with trying to negotiate what would be a mixed-use development is that inevitably it can be there's more housing. There's a site out on the edge of Dalkeith where currently we've got a developer saying, look, I'm happy to try and put in some housing and I'll do some units for you, spec units as well. Now, the issue is the land is identified for employment use. It's not for housing use. If we go down that route, it's yet more housing, yet more impact on schools and infrastructure. This issue actually is one which I think can be dealt with in a different way. I think the issue is not so much land to meet this demand, it's actually money. If there is a way in which we can look at budgets within the authority to use our own land to build no more than half a dozen starter units, maybe just 500 square feet with a roller shutter, something that's going to be really cheap for start-up companies to use. Other councils have been doing this, including Edinburgh, and they've gone very quickly because the demand is there. And I think even if we were to pump prime half a dozen small units on a piece of council land, I think it would make a real difference. And it would send a clear message to start-up companies in looking in Midlothian to say, yeah, we actually can get some premises. Because time and again, one of the issues we're coming up against is people just don't have the start-up capital to just get some premises. They can afford the rent, but they just can't afford the capital side. And there's just very few of these premises which they can get hold of.
Okay, thanks for that, yeah. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Item 5.10 is education. Grace?
Thank you. Committed to the creation of a world-class education system through excellence and equity, the report for this quarter focuses on the outcomes for the whole of the last year. As I said in previous reports, the theme for 17-18 is Mind the Gap, taking a closer look at progression. And we had set three main strategic priorities under the headings Raising Attainment and Achievement, Learning Provision and Leadership. In terms of raising attainment and achievement, I've included information on page 132 about the tracking through the broad general education, and there were improvements in 14 out of 16 of the key measures. In terms of the senior phase, we also had the report to December Council and to May Council on the leavers data, and I've included all of that in page 132, and we were very pleased with the outcomes in terms of leavers data using the national measures. It's clear to us that moving forward next year, we made significant improvement in terms of SIMD 1 performance for our leavers, which is now much greater than the national establishment. However, we're still lower than the national establishment in deciles 2, 3, 4, 5 and 10. So that will be an area of priority, including improving the breadth and depth measures in the local measures. That's the year-on-year S4, 5, 6 individual measures throughout 18-19, and that will be in each of the school improvement plans. In terms of learning provision, we have continued to implement the comprehensive leadership programme, not just for our head teachers, but head teachers, deputy head teachers and our principal teachers as well. And as mentioned previously, we will be opening on the 22nd of June the Centre for Research and Innovation in Learning. In terms of ensuring wellbeing, equality and inclusion, we've continued to focus on attendance and reducing exclusions, and the following year-end achievements are notable. There have been a drop of 27 primary exclusions, so that's from 101 last year to only 74 this year, so we're pleased with that, but only a drop of 19 secondary exclusions from 318 the previous year to 299 this year. So that for us is still too high, so we'll be working with our secondary schools next year on making sure that we reduce that even further. Attendance has not made the same level of improvement and has actually fallen by 0.6% in the primary and 0.8% in the secondary. So this remains a key focus for us. So what we're going to be doing is working Education and Children's Services together to ensure that we launch an attendance campaign in August, because that for us is an urgent area of improvement itself. In terms of early years, we brought previous reports to Council on the expansion, and we plan to bring a further report to June Council on the funding, because obviously we were awaiting the announcements on funding. On page 135, I outline the achievements of the Lifelong Learning and Employability Service. That was the service that was completely transformed and launched back in 2016, and their achievements are notable. Over the last 12 months, there's been 595 projects. They've reached 4,427 young people who have attended the Positive Destinations projects, and that's 573 more than last year, and we've managed to sustain our 95% destinations. 1,505 qualifications have actually been achieved by adults, so that's a real significant improvement there. And 19 young people who participated in PAVE, so they are hardest to reach, and over 80% of the PAVE participants gained 5 or more qualifications. So that's really important, because they can now move on to either further education or into employment, so it means that we can begin to reduce the activity agreements. 127 adults with disabilities, we've also supported them on a one-to-one basis, and that's an increase of 76% on last year, and 113 day and evening courses were actually provided. And we've put in a wee chart there that Annette Leng has pulled from her own improvement report, because it's really been quite staggering in terms of the improvements within that service alone, and the amount of people that that service are actually managing to meet, given that they are hardest to reach people. In addition to that, Mary had mentioned before the securing the $836,000 for the lottery early action funding secured for mental health, and also the LLE service has attracted over $240,000 through winning contracts, external funding and also charging for services. In terms of the emerging challenges and risks, these are the same as before. I've also highlighted, though, that this year, over the course of 17-18, there has been a significant change to National 5 qualifications, in that there was the removal of internal assessments. This means that children will be sitting a longer exam, so they will not be relying on internal assessments. And we're quite concerned about the risk of that to the National 5 qualifications.
Thanks, Grace. Any comments or questions? Jim?
Just to thank Grace for what is probably the most comprehensive narrative I've seen in any of these reports that that came before the Cabinet for quite a while. And it shows the amount of work that's ongoing at the moment, with what is at the end of the day quite a slimmed down team as far as education is concerned. So well done on that. And I particularly want to mention, Grace touched on the £836,000 on early action funding that was won to work with young people's mental health issues. I think, and having been involved in some of the kind of meetings associated with that, I think the credit has to go to the young people who were actually involved in preparing that submission. And I think that the senior staff in here certainly seem to be of the opinion that if it hadn't been for the input from the young people involved, we wouldn't have won that award, so that money. So congratulations to them again. I'm on a bit of a theme here, I think, today, but again, just concerns about reading some of the narrative on the challenges regarding the 1140 hours and the missed timing of the potential to get developer contributions towards this. You know, that this is only going to apply to future developments that we agree to, and there's a real disconnect there that could mean that we're talking about. And this is just an early calculation of between £3.7 and £5.6 million in terms of capital shortfall in funding what we require. Again, because we're a fast-growing local authority, we didn't have the spare capacity in the schools that some other authorities have to be able to accommodate the 1140 hours, and we've got to have all these additional pressures coming on here as well. And it's something that certainly it gives me some concern about how we're going to make all this stack up.
Sounds like your meeting with John Swinney is going to be a long one. Okay. Is there any other questions or comments? Sorry, Mary.
Just on that theme, I don't know if members were aware, but there was an article in last night's evening news about early years. It was the childminders from Pennycook, saying that they're going to be disadvantaged by the implementation of the 1140 hours and that some of them were losing out on £300 a week. Some of the information was a wee bit inaccurate in that the article said there's not going to be enough places for children in Pennycook, in a number of early years places, but we will address that there will be places for children in Pennycook, but parents may not get their first choice. And we've said that all along, because it's about parental choice and because it's about the money follows the child. The parents can either go to a private provider, they can go to a childminder and whatnot. But at the moment, we're just in the pilot phase. The childminders have been involved in some of the programmes that we're doing. They're involved in the Mayfield pilot. But also, childminders, the Scottish Government is also saying that there has to be a level of qualification of the childminders. And some of them are a wee bit resistant to this, because they feel that they've done it for years, so therefore why should they have to do the training? But it's a bit like our foster carers that we had. Foster carers we've maybe had for 20 years still have to do the training. So there's a bit of tension, but Julie is an amazing officer and, you know, is very inclusive about who she pulls in, and, you know, she pulls in people, tries to keep them up to date. But just to let you know, we are addressing it, and children in Pennycook will have places at a nursery or a provision in Pennycook. It may not be their first choice.
Jim.
I think that's a really good point to bring in, Mary. I think, you know, I'm talking about the financial challenges of the 1140 hours, but there's also the managing expectations. And, you know, I think an elected member at a meeting in here just a couple of weeks ago asked Mary a question about, can you guarantee that there'll be adequate provision within all our schools to suit, you know, any, you know, the implementation of 1140 hours? And we absolutely cannot do that because of this issue with the money following the child. You know, we can't, to do that, we'd virtually have to have a provision to take every child in Midlothian in every school. So, you know, it's just not feasible. So I think managing the expectations and explaining to parents the kind of background and the realities to this is going to be just as important as sourcing the adequate finance.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you, Grace Mary.
Now move on to item 5.11, commercial operations. Ricky.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Similar to others, I'll highlight some issues for members to be aware of and then pause at that point for questions. In terms of commercial operations, focusing on waste initially, as members will be aware, we're fast approaching the point where our residual waste plant at Miller Hill is nearing completion. The good thing is that when you speak to people that construct these kind of facilities, it's usually incredibly problematic. But at this stage, it's on programme, it's on budget, which, as I say, is kind of fairly unique. We will start taking commissioning waste later this year. So essentially that gets the plant up and running. And then mid-2019 is when it will take all the waste from Midlothian and Edinburgh. Councillor Muirhead touched on the whole kind of recycling market and the issues in that regard. Obviously, the target for us is 60% recycling by 2020, and we're well into the 50% now. And one of the things that the plant will do will give front-end further separation, particularly of the metals at that front end. I've talked there about a comprehensive waste strategy, and we've got a draft that we're working on, and that will come before members in due course, and that will inform the direction of travel for waste going forward. One of the recent meetings last week at Avi Moore brought all the waste managers together, and one of the common themes amongst the waste managers is such a transit, it's a moving feast all the time. What's happening across the world, indeed, is changing, and so it is very much a difficult area to predict. But hopefully, the waste strategy will be able to inform council and take us forward in a positive direction. In terms of the land and countryside team, it's probably I'm going to focus here on the kind of entrepreneurial aspects of that service. And to be honest, from a fairly modest beginning, there's a substantial amount of income that we're now generating within that service. Whilst a lot of it is work on behalf of the council, a lot of it is securing grants. But more interestingly for me is that we're actually competing against the private sector. And not only are we winning that work, we're actually doing it where we're creating an excess of income. So it's working really, really well. And in that regard, we're also looking to develop other opportunities to bring in income. We focus there on the work that's ongoing at Vogrey, and that's a combination of what we do with the golf course, foot golf we've introduced, disc golf. We've also had a couple of successful dance projects. And in the bigger picture, there is work looking at what is the future for Vogrey, and that was courtesy of work through the Blueprint Group from the Waverley Line. In terms of our travel service, we had an audit carried out by the Freight Transport Authority. It primarily focused on the vehicle management and the service provided, and there was a number of issues that were raised there that we're addressing and putting forward. But, again, it was a positive report in that we're doing many things well. So this is about taking us forward, certainly over the next 5 years, and then leading into our move to Hopefield Depot, where we'll expand the offering there. For one example there is the MOT of the taxi fleet within Midlothian that we hope to bring in. Not only that will provide a convenient service for taxi owners in Midlothian, but it also provide an income stream for the garage. In terms of health and safety, again, just focusing on that entrepreneurial aspect, we developed a calendar of potential training that we could offer, and that was distributed widely, both internally, but more importantly, externally. We're getting a number of organisations that are looking to take advantage of that. We've also looked into the military sector, where there's funded placements offered to ex-military personnel coming into the private sector, and we're able to look at training offering there. So we see that as being particularly successful going forward. And what we have done is we've put in quite a bit of work to give some resilience to that team to make sure that we can deliver on the offering that we're making. Within road services, I'm just going to touch on the severe weather that we've had. Obviously, members will be well aware that it was a bit more extreme than normal. That did have a significant impact on the road network. We've put in place a relatively early plan, both in terms of our temporary repairs and following that where we can with our programme of permanent repairs. So we've been on that for the last 5 or 6 weeks, and that will be taking us through for the next 2 or 3 months to a point where we can get the network back to a reasonable condition. The decriminalised parking enforcement began at the beginning of April, and it's early days to say what the overall impact is, but what I can say is that the level of fines has kind of, at the moment, it's at a point where we're issuing about 25 to 30 fines per day. But I suppose more importantly for me is when I travel round, I now see those bottlenecks, those areas where there was congestion, where there were road safety issues, i.e. at bus stops, at crossing points. These are largely moved. So in that regard, the enhanced enforcement is making a significant difference. Just moving on to some of the challenges, I've already alluded to the waste strategy and the challenges in terms of putting something in place to address not only a growing population but the changes that are occurring. In terms of land and countryside, we've put in a management restructure there that's hopefully fit for purpose to take the service forward. One of the areas that we've made some initial gains, and I'll focus on Lone Head, is this idea of where we can work with communities. It's not about transferring our responsibility to the community, it's working with a community. So in terms of our floral displays, we're working with the Lone Head community, and that has been really successful. It's early days, but indeed, I never seen it myself, but apparently there was a programme on television that was highlighting the work of the church who were involved in that and the positive aspects of that. That was last week. I'll probably pause at that point, Chair, and take any questions.
Questions, comments? John.
Thanks, Derek, and thanks, Ricky, for the report. I've been quite impressed, actually, with the expansion of the services coming out of Vaugirai, and I think we're up to the third dance festival coming out there. And just to pass on my thanks to the team for the way that they've managed in working with the local community there. There was, I think after the first one, there was a few complaints. There was a few after the second one, but there was hardly any after the third. And I think it's great to see such an excellent resource in our community being used and attracting visitors out to the county. With respect to the waste services, you were talking about a shifting landscape. Is there elements of that that are relatively fixed, like glass recycling and paper? You know, is there some sort of surety in the future of those areas, and is it more plastics, or is it the sort of changing legislation that's moving things around for how councils respond?
Yeah, so the dry recycling market is still a very much a moving feast. Particular issues that we'll face, and I suppose this for me reflects where the market is, and that is that currently we have Viridor, who have a facility at Cockpen, a local employer, and we've got a meeting in June with them. My concern is that they, at this moment in time, are not saying they're committed to that market. So in other words, the doubts, the concerns and the future are not something that they as a business are necessarily confident about. So that is an issue. In terms of how we can maximise the potential to ensure that our dry recycling goes on to a kind of an end producer or an end recycler, you can reflect on the Household Waste Charter, which this council is a signatory to, and that's looking at further separation of paper, card and the plastics, tins, etc. Essentially what it's saying is that the market is looking for the highest quality. So when you kind of separate them, that's when you get the highest quality. So in terms of the end market for those products, it is still very much about quality. The lower end quality is likely to not get taken. So that's the concern. Glass, I've had a discussion along with Phil Riddell with a local company who use glass. And at the very least, that would be an outlet and a kind of long-term outlet. So I don't have the same concerns about that as I do have about the other products.
Thanks, Ricky. John?
Thanks again, Derek. As part of my role of being a learning champion with Councillor Johnson, we attend some of the meetings with the Lifelong Learning Committee, and I think there's a representative from the health and safety team who's spoken to us about delivering first aid training. And I'm wondering, is there scope to kind of have a look right across the council about who is buying in first aid training and other sort of training, whether or not that presents an opportunity to in fact grow the team as opposed to putting additional pressure onto it?
Yeah, as I was saying when they talked about the training brochure, that's something that's been distributed widely, internally and externally, and we are picking up on any issues about training that perhaps has been picked up by another provider to ensure that it does actually take place with their own team. So we're maximising the opportunities we can and minimising the cost to the council.
OK, thanks for that, Ricky. Any other questions for Ricky on this? Ricky, just to sort of say... The level of fines, is that above what you had expected or below?
Slightly above at this point in time. But as I say, it's early doors. And one of the other things just for Cabinet to be aware of, Council obviously did set up a working group to look at how we can consider other areas. And that working group is going to meet, I understand, at the beginning of June.
That would be helpful. You can clearly see that there's a welcome to introducing a service, and it's across Midlothian quite. I think people are happy to see it back. That'll quickly die off at the early fines. Okay, is there any other questions, Mary?
Just to make members aware that we've actually had MSP BT has met with the traders in Lone Head, who are complaining about the implementation of this and have made claims about loss of income, significant loss of income, due to the implementation of what was already there. We've pointed out that actually it's nothing new, we're just implementing it. However, there's a number of complaints in from the traders in Lone Head.
I'm sure anything can be altered if it's massively, but I would suppose for every winner there's going to be a loser. Okay. If there's any other questions for Ricky, can we now move on? We've dealt with the items 5.12 and 5.13, so now move to item 5.14, Midlothian Council, quarter four, Kenneth.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is the the financial report, the performance report for the end of the financial year. It's set out as ever under the five themes in the Single Midlothian Plan. I think lots of positives in terms of performance. We've already spoken about quite a number of these in the course of this morning's meeting, so I don't intend to go into more detail on that. I suppose just to pick up on the issue of the challenges, and for me there's two very specific, closely related aspects which we've touched on a number of times this morning. One is all about the financial sustainability and the challenge around about that. And the key there, or one of the keys there to moving forward, is of course the transformation programme as we move forward. It's about the new relationships with how we work with our communities, and both Ian and Ricky spoke about that. It's about really moving forward on the digital agenda, because that can both improve services to our customers and also reduce costs. And it's about the more entrepreneurial approach. And, again, Ricky was talking about some good early examples of that, but it's about, you know, accelerating that and taking that forward. And, of course, these are the three primary strands of our new transformation programme. I think it's really important that we move forward in them with a lot of energy and ensure they're appropriately resourced to deliver. The second thing we've touched on quite a lot is all about the rate of growth. That's clearly exacerbating our financial pressures, but it's also creating these significant challenges in terms of social infrastructure and service provision, schools, housing, roads, etc. We've referenced the fact that we're bringing forward the new capital strategy to the Council in June, which will endeavour to capture that and the scale of that challenge. And that is combined, as we said, with the very real pressures in areas such as adult social care and children's services, the scale of changes in education and early years. So for me, the other theme that's come out of this, and which we've already, I think, captured, is some sort of recognition of Midlothian's exceptionalism, because the figures that you saw in Grace's report earlier in the agenda showed not only are we the fastest growing council, but actually forecast for the 2016 to 2026 period, we are significantly faster than any other area. And that it really is an unprecedented situation. And I think it's really important as a council we think about how we ensure that we, lobby government to get a share of resources which recognises that contribution, because that contribution is about a very real commitment and a very real support to the growth in the Scottish economy, and also, of course, the housing demand, particularly in the southeast of Scotland. So, for me, these are the two kind of key themes I'd take out of that. Obviously, there's a lot more covered in the overall council report. I'm happy to discuss any aspect.
Thanks, Kenneth. We've discussed quite a few issues over time, especially over the budget time, with some of the issues we raised with Kenneth, or Kenneth raises again today. Is there any questions for Kenneth at this stage? We're happy to note the report. Thank you. OK, item 5.15, the balance scorecard indicators, 2017-18. Kenneth.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'll be relatively brief in this. Again, this is the summary of the balanced scorecard performance for 17-18. So it covers the three key priorities in the Single Midlothian Plan. So that's about reducing the gap in economic circumstances, reducing the gap in health inequalities, and reducing the gap in learning outcomes as well. It then sets out key indicators under each of the five themes of the Single Midlothian Plan. And finally, there's a series of indicators relating to internal processes, learning and growth within the organisation, and its financial health. The only point I'd make is, particularly in relation to the latter category, there's quite a number of these which will only be finalised after the year-end accounts have been completed. So again, Chair, happy to take any questions on this.
Is there any questions, comments for Kenneth? Okay, we're happy to note the report. Thank you. Item 5.16 is local government benchmarking results again, Kenneth.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. We bring forward this report each year, setting out the Council's performance against the local government benchmarking framework. As always, there's an element of the historic about this. This is a 16-17 performance, which was published in March of this year. The local government benchmarking framework has been in place, I think, for 7 years now. And while sometimes it's easy to identify weaknesses in it, I would only remind those that would complain about it as to what there was prior to that, which was a series of statutory performance indicators, which were notable primarily for their meaninglessness. So the local government benchmarking framework is a significant step forward, and it has changed a lot over the year. What it does enable us to do is share best practice and learn from councils that are performing well in particular areas, and that's the real strength on it. There has been a significant increase in the number of indicators this year, and that relates to the indicators relating to education and children's services, which has been a thorough review. So we now have a total of 75 indicators. And the key principle in terms of reviewing indicators on an ongoing basis is about comparability across all 32 councils. So I don't think anyone would suggest that the new children's services set of indicators are perfect, but they're certainly better than what came before. And actually, if you look through the framework, there are other aspects of the framework that need that similar review and reform. And I think particularly in relation to adult social care, the indicators that are there are not good measures of how that service is performing. I mean, and I don't mean that on a Midlothian basis, I mean that on a national basis. And there, I know there is an intention to review that particular set of indicators. Of the 75 I mentioned, just to emphasise, there's two that relate to museums and galleries that don't apply to Midlothian, and there's a number for which we have no data as yet. So in the appendix, the indicators are grouped under the categories set out, paragraph 2 on the opening page. And for each set of indicators, we give a national overview, an overview of council performance, and then the critical thing, really, the actions that we're taking to improve our performance. And the framework reports really on three types of indicators: those which relate to what we're spending on particular services, those which relate to service performance, and those which relate to how satisfied local people are with our performance. The latter indicators, and I've spoken about this before, the latter indicators that relate to satisfaction, we perform relatively poorly on. Now, these are measured by a national survey, so the sample in Midlothian is very small. You might expect that to introduce some variability in the figures, but it doesn't explain why on the satisfaction indicators our performance is generally, but not always, relatively poor. We tend to do better on the performance measures, and in terms of the financial measures, these often relate to, you know, our scale as a council, where in some areas, because of our relatively small scale, our costs can be higher sometimes on a per unit basis. So the temptation, as always, is to view benchmarks as a league table. I think our analysis of that requires a little bit more subtlety. And the comment made at the top of the second page of the report about how the data set can be regarded as a useful sort of can opener to flag up issues that are worthy of further investigation. And that's certainly the report, or the approach that I endeavour to take. And when I meet colleagues, heads of service, for their quarterly reviews, I tend to focus in on, you know, areas where we're in quarter four. What's the reason for that? Do we have improvement measures in place? Do we have a clear route out of that? And I think that's where the value of the indicators lie. So in summary, there are still some questions about the relevance and comparability and reliability of indicators. We've had that discussion before. It is strengthening the local government benchmarking framework. In terms of this year, you'll note on the top of the third page, we have precisely the same number of indicators in the top half as the lower half. That's, of course, on a different indicator set from last year. I mean, one of the things that's worth pointing out in relation to that is that we've got a lot of new indicators in education and children's services. Now, in that service area, we have a very clear trajectory of improvement, which has been, you know, noted by both within the council and certainly beyond as well. But the fact is that a lot of the indicators still currently lie in the lower quartiles. So that's had an impact on the overall position for this year. In terms of the appendix, which I know not everybody is enthusiastic about performance information as I am, but I do think the appendix makes for interesting reading. I just draw your attention to page 4, which includes an overall summary in relation to the different local government benchmarking categories and showing how many of our indicators fall within each quartile for each of the service areas. And it perhaps gives a slightly unexpected pattern, but I do think that it's a helpful summary in terms of where we're generally performing stronger, where we know we've got more work to do, and we've got that, broadly speaking, we have these plans in place. And as I say, I'd commend the detail to members, and I'm happy to take any questions, and pleased to see that I've got a number of colleagues still in the chamber to help with any questions you might have.
Okay, Kenneth, thank you. Are there any questions? So, Kenneth, right, the enthusiasm, that's wrong. Okay, members happy with the report? Okay, thank you. We have one private report, and that's the minute of the education appointment.